This week I want to speak about one Rashi at length, because the explanation is something that is a foundation bichlal of Yiddishkeit and of life in general. You're all familiar with the Rashi, but it's going to take the whole class to explain what he really means. The Rashi is right away in the beginning of the Sedra. Vayeshev Yaakov, and that Rashi says, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. Yaakov Avinu wanted to sit in peace and tranquility. Kofatz Olav Rogzo Shel Yosef. So the Rogez we'll see means the agitation, not the anger. The agitation of Yosef jumped upon him. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Lo dayin l'tzadikim, ma shemesukan lohem la'olam haba. It's not enough for the tzadikim what's prepared for them in the world to come. U'mevakshim leishe b'shalva ba'olam hazeh. And they want to take it easy in this world too. And the Rebbe Shem therefore didn't permit Yaakov Avinu to take it easy in this world, because it's not enough for him what he has in the next world, and therefore he gave him the tzaris of Yosef. On the surface, this Rashi is very difficult. It's not a Rashi, it's a Medrash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't fargin a tzaddik that he should have two worlds. Right, fargin in Yiddish means he can't give him the benefit of both worlds. Right, he has to bedafka take one world away from him. It's either this world or the next world. He can't have both. Why not? There are plenty of tzaddikim who had it good in both worlds. Not everybody gets two tables. The Gemara says, "Lo hakol zochim l'shtei shulchanos," but some people do. There were great tzaddikim who had it good in this world and good in the next world. So what does it mean? Kadosh Baruch Hu can't stand if Yaakov Avinu is going to have it good in this world because it's not enough for him what he has in the next world? Why? So the Torah Tumima says that a terrible mistake crept into Rashi, probably from the printers. Because if you look at the Medrash, at least one of the Medrashim, one of the versions of the Medrashim that Rashi could have taken his perish from, the Medrash says something different. The Medrash says like this, Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva. Yaakov wanted to sit in peace and tranquility. Kofatz Olav Rogzo Shel Yosef. Immediately, the Rogez of Yosef jumped on him. Omar HaSotan. The Sotan said, it's not enough for a tzaddik what he has in the next world. He needs this world too. Says the Torah Tzmima, it's not God who can't take it if the tzaddik has it both good in this world and the next world. The Sotan. So now he solved the problem. It's not God who said this. It's the Sotan who said it. I really don't understand the Torah Tzmima at all. Because it doesn't answer the question. Because the Sotan doesn't run this world. God does. The Satan can only bring up an argument. But if God doesn't agree with it, nothing happens from it. So if the Satan says, it's not enough what Yaakov has in the next world, he needs this world too. And what happened in the end? That the rogues of Yosef befell him. That means that God agreed. So we're back to where we started. What do you care if the Satan initiated it or not? In the end, God agreed. And this is what happened to Yaakov. So, didn't answer any question. We're still back to where we started. Why did God agree? If that's not depressing enough, let me tell you an even more depressing medrash. And don't leave before I explain these, because I don't want to make you depressed. The medrash says that there was a woman in history who had the greatest nachas that any woman ever had. It was the eighth day of the Miluim, the day that they consecrated the Mishkan. This woman was Elisheva Bas Aminadav. She was the wife of Aaron HaKohen. On that day, she saw her husband initiated to be the Kohen Gadol. inducted into the Kohen Gadola, the first Kohen Gadol in history. Her husband became that day. Her four sons were inducted into the Kohuna. They were the first regular Kohanim that day. Her brother-in-law was Moshe Rabbeinu, right, who was running the whole show. And her brother was Nachshon ben Aminadav, who brought the first sacrifice to consecrate the Mizbeach on that day. So she was surrounded with Nachas. Her husband, her children, her brother-in-law, her brother. And what happened that day? What happened that day is that two of her sons were killed when they went into the Kodesh HaKadosh. So it says the Medrash, from here we see that Simcha never remains for anybody. You could be very happy, but there's always a monkey wrench that breaks up your Simcha. Now comes the clincher. Now if you really want to get depressed, listen to this Medrash. It's in the same place. The Medrash says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the following. When I created the world, so I was very happy. Yismach Hashem b'ma'asav. I was happy with what I created. And Adam and Chava didn't leave me happy too long because they sinned and they made me very unhappy. So if I couldn't remain happy too long in this world, then I'm not letting anybody remain happy in this world too long. Now that, first of all, sounds like spite. It doesn't sound like God. So what's going on over here? Sounds like this world is not a place to be happy, and you can't be happy too long, and if you are, watch it. So, what? Where does it say all of this? In the same Medrash, in Parsha Shmini, in the Tanchuma. Medrash Tanchuma, Parsha Shmini. So let me explain what this all means, so you don't get depressed from it seems like God is spiting us and doesn't let us stay happy in this world, and Yaakov Avinu couldn't have peace and tranquility in this world, and so on. In order to understand that, I want to start with a Medrash that's in Koheles Rabbah on the Pasuk Me'uvas Lo Yuchal Lishkon. I think it's the end of the first parak in Koheles. Me'uvas, something can be distorted, crooked.
With an iron.
Right, with an iron. Velo yuchal liskon, can't be corrected. Can't be repaired. There are certain things that are crooked and can't be repaired. On that pasuk, the Medrash says the following story. There were two Rishoyim who were partners in crime in this world. They robbed, they murdered, they were really despicable people. And one of them dropped dead and went to Gehenna. And he was suffering in Gehenna for many years. One day, he looks up and he sees that they're escorting the neshama of his partner into Gan Eden. So he calls over the angel who's appointed over the neshamas in Gehenna, and he says, there must have been some kind of computer error over here. Because that's my partner. When I robbed, he robbed. When I murdered, he murdered. If I'm in Gehenna, he should be in Gehenna. And if he's in Gan Eden, then I should be in Gan Eden. So go find out where the mistake was and either get me out of here or bring him to keep me company. So Malach says, there's no mistake. He belongs there, you belong here. He said, oh, I get it. He must have bribed somebody. So just tell me how much and who and I'll double the amount. Just get me out of here. The Malach says, no bribery here. He said, then explain to me, why is my former partner in Gan Eden and I'm in Gehenna? The Malach says, you don't know what happened after you died. You see, you dropped dead one day in the street, and you were such a despicable person, nobody wanted to bury you. So your body lay in the street for 3 days. After the 3 days, somebody had a little mercy on you and kicked your body into a hole in the side of the road. That's where you're buried. When your friend saw this, he realized that this could be his end too. And he started to rethink his whole life. And he did tshuva, and he died a totally repentant tzaddik. So he's in Gan Eden, and you're in Gehenna. The guy said, oh, that's great, I thought it's going to cost me money. I'll do tshuva too. I regret it. If I would have known where I'm going to end up, I never would have done it. Chatasi, avisi, pashati, I'll never do it again, get me out of here. And the Malach says, I'm sorry, but it's a little late. Don't you know that the world you came from is like Erev Shabbos? And the world you're in now is like Shabbos. If you prepare Erev Shabbos, you have what to eat on Shabbos. You didn't prepare anything on Erev Shabbos in this world. Now you want to prepare. Now it's Shabbos. Now is no time to prepare. And don't you know, the Malach continued, the world you came from is like the Yabasha, the dry land. And the world you're in now is like the sea. If you prepare your boat with supplies on the dry land, then you have what to eat in the middle of the ocean. But you didn't prepare any supplies on the dry land. Now you're in the middle of the ocean. There's no supermarkets here to go buy supplies. Now it's too late. And don't you know, the Malach said, the world you came from is like the Yishuv, like the city. And the world you're in now is like the Midbar, it's like the desert. If you prepare yourself in the city, you can survive in the desert. But if you go into the desert without a survival kit, you can't get it in the desert. You came into the desert without any preparation. You can't, that's it, nothing to do in the desert. And the man realizes that it's crooked and can't be repaired, and he bemoans his fate. Two questions bother me about this medrash. First question. The Malach gave him three mishalim comparing Olam Hazeh to Olam Haba. Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, the Yabasha and the Yam, and the Yishuv and the Midbar. Why didn't he give him the mashal that's in Pirkei Avos? Ha'olam Hazeh domel prozdor bifnei ha'olam haba hashkein asmecha beprozdor kedei shetikonish betrakta. Says in Pirkei Avos, this world is like a preparation room to a castle. Prepare yourself in the preparation room so you can get into the castle. Why didn't the Malach tell him a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos? Three Mishalim, but not the one that has a lot of authority. It's a Mishnah. You didn't prepare yourself in the preparation room. Now you can't get into the castle. Why did he tell him three other Mishalim and not the one in Pirkei Avos?
Which Pirkei Avos is
it? It's in Pirkei. And second question, I'm sure the guy got the message after the first Mashal. Why was it necessary to give three Mishalim? They're basically saying the same thing in different words. So one of my Balabatim once said, that's Gehenna, listening to long drushes that aren't necessary. But I don't think that's the idea. So what is the idea? Basically, in order to understand this medrash and answer my questions, you have to understand the purpose of life. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create us the way He did? Why do we have this world, the next world? What's it all about? So what Chazal told us is the following. What we can understand about the whole purpose of our creation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being the ultimate good, wanted to shower goodness on a creation that could receive that goodness. Because the nature of good is to do good. To shower its goodness on others. HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore created neshamas that could receive the ultimate good, which is God Himself. So God wanted to shower Himself, His presence, on a creation that could receive it eternally. And that's what we call Olam Haba. Sadikim Yoshvim Va'atrosehem V'rosheihem V'nehenim Mizivashkina. Olam Haba is Sadikim sit with their crowns on their head, and they enjoy the presence of God. It's the ultimate enjoyment. They have a very close relationship with God eternally. That is Olam Haba. It's not something that we can really appreciate in what it is in this world, but it is the ultimate pleasure that a person could possibly have. It's the neshama having a close, intimate, eternal relationship with God. So fine. So if that was the purpose of creation, then why didn't God create neshamas and put them in Olam Haba and have that relationship with them? The answer is that God knew that the neshama would not appreciate that totally if it was given unearned and undeserved. Because that which you get for free, you don't 100% appreciate. So God wanted it to be the ultimate in pleasure. Total pleasure. And it wouldn't be unless the neshama earned it. So therefore, the Rabbanu Shalom put us in this, our neshama is in a physical world, in a body. And he said, I want you to discover me in the world. I'm hiding in this world. I want you to discover me, and you create the relationship with me instead of me creating with you. In one second we'll discuss how that's done. But first, in parentheses, let's ask a question that you should have asked, should be bothering you. And I'm going to explain to you what the answer, or better, why we can't answer that question. The question is the following. If the purpose of creation was to create neshamas that would bask in the pleasure of God, but that alone wouldn't have been sufficient because the neshama would not have appreciated that if it didn't earn it, why did God have to create this world to give the neshama the ability to earn that relationship? Why didn't he just change the rules a little bit and make a neshama that could appreciate things that aren't earned? Who made up that rule? Obviously God made up the rule. Why couldn't he make a neshama that could appreciate things that aren't earned? God can do anything. The answer to that question is, there is no answer that we could possibly understand. I'll explain to you why. Our brains, our minds, can only grasp those things that we have a connection to that exist within our realm. Anything outside of our realm, we have absolutely no way of grasping it. I'll prove it to you. Close your eyes, not too tightly, because I'd like you to remain awake. And picture in your mind nothing. Nothing. Okay, you have nothing pictured in your mind? Take your hand and put your hand in that nothing. Okay, is your hand in the middle of the nothing in your mind? That's not nothing. That's space. Now try again. Nothing means no space. It's impossible to even imagine. Why? Because we have no connection to that. It's not in our realm. In the world we live in, there's always space. There's no such thing as no space. So it's something that you can't even imagine. I'll give you another example. Imagine something that you never saw and never heard of. It's impossible. Because if you never saw and never heard of it, how could you possibly imagine it? The most you can do is imagine a monster with 10 heads and 4 arms and 5 legs, but it's all a composite of things you saw or heard of. But to imagine something that no part of it you ever saw or heard of is impossible, because you have no connection. Even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our only connection to Him is as a creator within the realm of creation. But before creation, we have no name for God. The biggest name for God, which we don't even say, is Yudkei Vavkei, which means the Mahave, the Creator. But outside of creation, we don't even have a name to describe God. We call Him Ein Sof, eternity, but that's not a name, that's a cop-out. That means I have no idea what I'm talking about, but I'll say it. So we have no connection at all to something outside of our realm. Therefore, you're not allowed to ask questions on what came before the world, what's beyond the world, not because it's awesome, because it's impossible. You have no connection to that. What's beyond the world, what's before the world. So asking the question, why did God create the world the way He did, and why couldn't if He created it differently, is a question on God's mind before creation. It's the kind of question that's impossible for our minds to grasp. The most we can ask is, once God created the world the way we see it, what can we understand about it? But why it couldn't have been different is a question that precedes creation, and that kind of question our minds can't grasp. There's no answer. So what we're answering is not, why did God create the world the way He did? But once God created the world the way He did, what can we understand about it? That's the question we're answering. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yeah.
How does it work if we know that we are in this world? Like, we know those old systems, and then why does it work so better?
Okay, hold on, we'll see. So how does it work? Let's see how it works. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took our neshamas, and He put them in a physical body, distance from Him, and He said, you connect to me instead of me connecting to you. How do you do that? So Torah and mitzvahs is just the beginning. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Torah, and he told us what kind of things are godly things and what kind of things are ungodly things. And we're supposed to use that as an example that every single thing we do in this world, no matter what, eating, drinking, social life, married life, economic life, political life, everything, we do in a way that's more God-like. And if we do it like that, then our neshamas become more like God. And if we're more like God, we have a greater connection to him. Or we can do it in a way that's less like God, ungodlike, and then we have less of a connection. We create our neshamas, or we enhance our neshamas to be more or less like God, and that is Olam Haba. Then we have that relationship. We created it. It's not that we earn it, because earning would not be the total appreciation. I'll tell you why. Imagine if somebody gave you a present of one of these plush reclining chairs. You sit in it, really, really comfortable. Do you think that you would enjoy it? Of course. What if you had to work, you really wanted a chair like that, and nobody gave it to you as a present? And you had to work 6 days a week, 8 hours a day, for a month, to earn enough money to buy the chair. And then finally you worked a full month, you have the money, you go out and buy the chair, and now you're sitting in it. Do you think you'd appreciate it more than if it was given to you as a present? Of course. What about the next scenario? You planted trees, nurtured them for years till they grew up enough to cut them down and cut them into lumber and make the frame of the chair. Then you mined iron, made it into nails, and knocked the frame together. Then you raised sheep, sheared their wool, and used it for the stuffing of the chair. Then you raised cotton, spun it into thread, made it into material for the upholstery of the chair. And now you sat in the chair. You think you'd appreciate it more? So what you make is more appreciated than what you earn. What you earn is more appreciated than what's given as a present. But the ultimate pleasure is if you make the reward yourself. So it's not like a Purim carnival. That's what many people think Olam Haba is like, and Olam Hazeh. In this world, you play the games. And if you win, you get coupons. At the end of the day, you cash in your coupons at the prize booth. If you have a lot of coupons, you get a big bear, and few coupons, you get a small bear. It's not the way it works. You know, it's not that. In this world, you play the games called mitzvahs. If you get, you do it right, you get points. If not, you get demerits. After 120 years, they punch your name into this master computer, add up all your points, subtract all your demerits, give you a piece of paper, go cash it in for a share in the world to come in the prize booth. It doesn't work like that, because it wouldn't be the ultimate pleasure. You create Olam Haba. That's how we do it. We create Olam Haba by doing things that are godly and doing them in a godly way. Yes?
Is that the same with Shabbat? Like, to a certain extent. Like, do you know how Shabbat is like a part of
right.
Like, do we create Shabbat, or do we earn it, or
are
we
given
it?
Yeah, we're given it to enhance. Shabbos is already a hint of what the reward is. Not so much the earning of it, but the reward itself. Shabbos is a hint of Olam Haba, the next stage.
But, like, in our world, when we have Shabbat...
Right, we enhance it, right, we create that Shabbat. We prepare for that Shabbat. And we make the Shabbat what it is. Okay, in any case, so now let's go back to the Mashalim. The real Mashal of Olam Hazeh to Olam Haba is what it says in Pirkei Avos. It's a preparation room to a castle. Let's analyze that mashal. Okay? Why do you build a preparation room for a castle? What purpose is there in building a preparation room for a castle? One purpose, to prepare to get in the castle. There is no other purpose to build it. If there wasn't a castle, you wouldn't build this room. Only to prepare to go in the castle. Therefore, what's it equipped with? What's the furnishings? Whatever will be needed to prepare to go in the castle. They don't have ping pong tables in there. They have hair dryers, they have combs, brushes, makeup, but they don't have anything that's extraneous to that purpose. Nothing that serves any other purpose. No purpose to it. And what do they do in that room? Only one thing. Prepare to go in the castle. They don't do anything else. That is the real mashal of Olam Hazeh to Olam Haba. It's like a preparation room to a castle. It wasn't created for any other purpose than to prepare for Olam Haba. This world wasn't equipped with anything. Nothing is in this world that is not for the sake of helping us prepare for Olam Haba. And there's nothing that you're supposed to do in this world except prepare for Olam Haba. Nothing. That doesn't mean you sit in a corner and say Tehillim, preparing for Olam Haba. It's a nice thing to do too. But it means living a full life, making use of everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world with one purpose. That it's a means to reach an end. Somehow I can utilize everything that God created, every second of my existence, to create more and more Olam Haba. And there's no limit. There's not just a certain amount of Olam Haba you can get. Olam Haba means a closeness to God. There's an infinite amount of levels that you can get closer and closer and closer for eternity. In mathematics, there is an infinite amount of whole numbers. Yet there's also an infinite amount of fractions between every whole number. That means in mathematics, there's an infinite amount of infinities. So if it applies to mathematics, it surely can apply to Olam Haba. There is an infinite amount of eternities. And there's no limit. That's the meaning of the following Gemara. The Gemara says there was a famous Abarian, a famous sinner, who something happened to him and shocked him into doing tshuva. And his tshuva was so intense, it just changed his whole life, that he died in the midst of doing the tshuva. And a bas kol went out, Ashrecho Reb Elezer ben Durdoi shemezumen l'olam haba. You're fortunate in that one second that you did tshuva intensely, you got your olam haba. When Reb Yehuda HaNasi heard about this, he cried. And he said, Yesh kona olamo b'shoa achas. You see, a person can be kona his olam haba. He can earn, create his olam haba in one second. So Tozer Rosh Yeshiva asks, why was Reb Yehuda HaNasi crying? He should have been elated. Wow, you can get Olam Haba in one second. Why was he crying about it? And he said the reason he was crying, because he realized then that you could do that every second. There's no limit to how much Olam Haba. Every second you can create more and more eternity. And how many seconds do we let slip through our fingers and do nothing? Something to cry about. So the concept, the true concept of Olam Hazeh, vis-a-vis Olam Haba, is contained in the Moshel and Pirkei Avos. HaOlam Hazeh Doma LeProzdor B'tnei Olam Haba. This world is like a preparation room to a castle. There is no other purpose why this world was created, Olam Hazeh. Because the whole purpose of creation was to give the Neshama Olam Haba. So what do you need this world for? To give the Neshama the ability to create Olam Haba. And therefore, God didn't put anything in this world that doesn't serve that purpose. And there's nothing that you're supposed to do in this world except do that. But everything you do can be done in a way that will create Olam Haba. So every single thing you come in contact with, every aspect of your life, every moment of your life, can be done either in a way that's more godly or less godly, and either gets you Olam Haba or loses you Olam Haba. That's what this world is all about, total. But go tell a Rasha who lived his whole life in crime, didn't you know that the whole purpose of this world was to create Olam Haba? Of course he didn't know that. And he doesn't know it now either, because he just died. Now he's dead. He's not necessarily a big tzaddik and philosopher because he died. So the Malach didn't waste his breath on this person to tell him, didn't you know the whole purpose of Olam Hazeh was for the sake of Olam Haba? But he said to him the following, maybe in your mind, Olam Hazeh was like Erev Shabbos, and Olam Haba was like Shabbos. It's not the same mashal anymore. Because Erev Shabbos, you do things for the sake of Erev Shabbos. It's not totally for the sake of Shabbos. You eat breakfast, you go to work, maybe part of the day. Not everything you do on Erev Shabbos is for the sake of Shabbos. But maybe that you understood. In your mind, this world was also a nice place, and the next world was the Iker. But you should have prepared. And even if that you didn't understand, And in your mind, Olam Hazeh was like the dry land, and Olam Haba was like the sea. Equal importance. This is a nice world, that's a nice world. But you knew that one day that your boat was going to sail. Why didn't you prepare? And even if that you didn't understand. And in your mind, Olam Hazeh was the city. This is it. And Olam Haba to you was a desert. Desolate, meaningless Olam Haba. Didn't mean anything to you. It was a desert. But you knew one day you're going to have to go into that desert. Why don't you at least prepare a survival kit? Manasha. Either you didn't believe at all, and then you surely don't deserve Olam Haba. Or you believed, but it didn't make any difference to you. You still don't deserve Olam Haba. That's what the Malach told you. But the real Hashkafa is not Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, and not Yam and Yabosha, and not City and Midbar. The real Hashkafa is Prozdor, Bifnei Hatrakli. Because that captures the real concept of Olam Hazeh, that its totality, the only reason it was created, the only thing that it's equipped with, and the only thing to do here is to prepare for Olam Haba. Yes?
How do you create infinity?
How do you create infinity? By becoming more and more like the one who is infinite. And then, by being like him, you have a connection to him.
So then, if you are in Olam Hazeh, then
right. You create an Olam Hazeh, a neshama, that is more and more like God. The more like God your neshama is, the more closer connection you have with it.
It's not the more time you have with Olam Hazeh, it's the more...
Not question, right. It's not a question of time, because time doesn't exist. Right. It's closeness. Right. It's closeness. Right. Okay. Now, if that's the case, then this world is a very important place. Because here is where you create Olam Haba, and once you get there, that's it. Whatever you have, you have. And it can be compared to the following. When I was growing up, I was about 7, 8 years old, so in my neighborhood in Miami, the supermarket had a contest. And the first prize, if you won the contest, was 15 minutes in the supermarket to take off the shelves for free, whatever you could. And some woman won this contest, and they invited everybody from the neighborhood to come and watch her get her prize. So I and my brothers, Aleihem HaShalom, went. It was interesting, why not? So we went to watch this woman grab things off the supermarket shelves for free. We came there and we see she bought special sneakers so she could run fast. She had a map of the supermarket on this thing connected to her head, so it was right in front of her, so she mapped off where the most expensive items were, so she wouldn't go take the cheap thing, she would go right away to the expensive thing. And she had 2 shopping carts each arm, so she could really make sure that she gets everything. No, she'd have room for everything. And they told her, look, we're going to count to 3, and we're going to blow a whistle, and you start. Ready, get set, go. Whatever in the next 15 minutes you grab and take in your shopping cart is yours. Then we blow the whistle at the end of the 15 minutes, and at that point, whatever you put in the shopping cart is ours. Doesn't, after the 15 minutes, forget it. So they blew the whistle and she started running, mamish, like a mashugana. And within a few minutes she was panting, sweating. Now imagine if somebody would have gone to this woman about 5 minutes into this 15 minutes and said, lady, you look really tired. You're out of breath, you're sweating. Here's a chair, have a seat, and rest a little bit. What do you think the woman would say? Are you out of your mind? I have 15 minutes. I'm not going to waste time sitting down in the middle of it. Come to me when the 15 minutes is up, and I'll sit for as long as you want. But not right now. Now it's counterproductive. Now's not the time to sit and rest. Now's the time to be dynamic. It's like those who come from America can appreciate this here in Eretz Israel, and I think in England it's not like that either so much. But at weddings they have this gala smorgasbord, many weddings. And people live to go to these weddings for the smorgasbord. I once, in America, was standing behind 2 men waiting for the smorgasbord, and one of them said to the other one, I didn't eat for 3 days in preparation for this wedding. And afterwards I saw that Itaka looked like he hadn't eaten for 3 days. In any case, people, you know, the Gemara says that that's what this world is like, a gigantic smorgasbord. Grab what you can, because eventually they're going to start turning the lights on and off, and the waiters and waitresses are going to come and take everything away, because you're going to have to go to the chuppah. Right? Many people feel it's an imposition that there's a chuppah altogether by these things. You know, it just disturbs the whole smorgasbord. It's the preparatory meal to the meal. In any case, that's what this world is like, the Gemara says. Chatov echol, grab what you can in this world, because once you get to Olam Haba, you're not going to have a chance, it's going to be gone. Grab meaning get as many mitzvahs as you can, do as much as you can to create Olam Haba, because this is the world where you create Olam Haba. And in the next world, whatever you have, you have. There's nothing to be around to create anymore. If that's the case, it is counterproductive for a person to feel fulfilled in this world and to take it easy. Just like the lady who would take it easy in the middle of the 15 minutes when whatever she can grab is hers. That's what the Medrash says, that Simcha does not remain for anyone in this world. It's the kind of Simcha where you feel fulfilled, and it makes you feel that you can just rest on your laurels and there's no need to be dynamic. That kind of Simcha where you've made it, that's for Olam Haba, that's not for this world. That's what Olam Haba is, you made it. In this world you're making it. Taking a rest and feeling that I've reached it is not productive. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not let a person have that kind of simcha in this world. Doesn't remain. He makes people dynamic. He makes them feel there's something missing and they have to keep working. And that's what it means that God said, when I created the world, I was happy. And I didn't remain happy too long. And therefore nobody's going to remain happy. It's not spite. What it means is the following. God said, when I created the world, I was happy. Because everything was perfect. And I could have remained happy because I could have made a perfect world. But that's not the purpose of this world. The purpose of this world is not to be perfect. The purpose of this world is to be a place that's imperfect that you can create perfection. So I didn't remain happy because that's not the purpose. I gave Adam and Chava free choice where they could make me unhappy. But that's all part of the dynamics of this world. So therefore nobody's going to remain happy in this world because it's not the purpose of creation. Because if it was, then I could remain happy too. But that's not the reason I created this world. That's the reason I created the next world. That's why it says, Oz yimale schok pinu. And Chazal learned from that, Lo yimale odam schok pi v'olam hazeh. A person shouldn't fill his mouth with simcha in this world. Only in the next world. Because the next world is a place for the total perfection. The total enjoyment. This is the world to earn it and create it. So therefore, you can't be perfect and reach that feeling of satisfaction in this world, because then you won't be dynamic. You'll be sitting down in the middle of the 15 minutes. And that's exactly what Rashi says, the Medrash says, by Yaakov. Bikesh Yaakov leishev b'shalva. It doesn't say Bikesh Yaakov shalva. Yaakov wanted some peace and quiet. There's nothing wrong with that. A tzaddik can have peace and quiet in this world. But he doesn't remain inactive. He takes the advantage of the peace and quiet and now puts more work in. That's the idea. But Yaakov wanted leishev b'shalva. Leishev means to remain at peace and quiet. Just to take a rest for a few minutes. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to read it now with a different inflection. Not the same we said before. Not lodayim with tzaddikim hashem asukim l'mabo. Not enough what the tzaddik has in the world to come. He needs to take it easy in this world too. That's not the way to read it. Same words, just read it a little bit differently. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lodayim with tzaddikim hashem asukim l'mabo. It's never enough for a tzaddik what he already has prepared in the world to come. And he wants to take it easy in this world? It's like the lady taking it easy in the middle of the 15 minutes. It's not productive. I'm not going to let him do that. I'm going to agitate him. That's what roges means. Roges means to make you dynamic. In washing machines, the propeller that goes around and moves the clothes up and down or whatever so they become clean is called an agitator. To be agitated means to keep on the move, to push you to be dynamic, not to let you just take it easy and glide along. That's the purpose of this world. The purpose of this world is to give you opportunities to grow and to produce and to do. This is a world of action. It's not a world of taking it easy. Taking it easy is next world. Go to Har HaMenuchos, you'll see people taking it easy. Right? Every day, get up, sleep, no problem.
Got it.
What's
that?
What
is that? That's a cemetery. At Har HaMenuchos, everybody is resting. But in this world, a person has to be dynamic. And therefore, it's not something bad, something good, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu constantly gives a person the feeling that he hasn't yet made it and he needs to do more. If you use it the right way, it's fine. Sometimes people use it in a depressing way and use it negatively, but that's free choice. You have a choice to use it positively or not. There's one other aspect to this, and that is that Yaakov Avinu wanted more to make this world like the next world. In other words, let's take it easy over here. Right? I already went through a lot of tzaras, so let me enjoy, right, this world already as a place where you can take it easy. And the Rebbe Hashem said, no. Every second in this world, you could create more of a haba. Don't take it easy. It's not in your best interest, even for 1 second, to take a breather. If you can be dynamic, can use that. There's nothing wrong with having a good in this world, but use that environment to put in more work, not to take it easy and just for the sake of taking it easy. And one more aspect: the Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman says that part of what Yaakov Avinu did wrong was he made being tranquil in this world too important. Like he said, look, I can't function unless I have a little tranquility. But that made this world and the matzav in this world too important. Instead of looking for the kind of environment that you think will be best for you to function in this world, why don't you take it that God will give you the environment that is best for you? God will bring you the factors that are most conducive for you to be active in this world. So sometimes the situations are not what we like. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu deemed that that's for you the best situation in order to make you, because it's not, the situations in this world are not judged by how you get them in this world, it's how you use them for the next world. So maybe the Rebbe Hashem said, yeah, true, it's not so comfortable for you in this world that what the situation I'm giving you. But you should know that what you can do with that situation is much better than if it would have been comfortable for you and have a different situation. So if you understand that this world is only a means to reach an end, but the ikkar is how you use it for that end, then what exactly the situation in this world is not all that important. It's how you use it. What benefit you get from it. So therefore, don't make so much of a big deal that, well, I need this situation and that's going to be what's best for me. No. Take the situation as it comes. You can daven and hope that it'll get better. And you can think that I would function better in a different situation. And that's what you're allowed to daven for that. And you're allowed to make hishtadlus for that. But as long as it doesn't change, make the best of it, because obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks this is what's best for you in this world vis-a-vis what you can accomplish in the next world, even though in this world itself it's not so comfortable. That's the idea. Not that you should just accept everything and never daven and never want to change the situation. No, you can be mishtadel and everything, but as long as it doesn't change yet, make the best of it, because obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels that this is the ideal situation for you to be dynamic in. And you make your status, whatever, and they change. And then another situation will be ideal for you. But at this point, this situation is ideal. Yes?
If someone said that Hashem isn't always happy because you're not supposed to be happy in this world, but like Hashem isn't in this world, like Hashem is perfect.
We're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in creation as the creator. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, in my relationship to creation, right? I could have made a creation that makes me happy all the time because it would be perfect. And everything would be total perfection. But that's not the reason why I created this world. That's the next world. This world was created to be dafka imperfect so you can create perfection. So therefore, if I didn't create the world to remain happy, that wasn't the purpose, then nobody's going to remain happy because that's its purpose. And therefore, whenever you feel like, you know, fulfilled, I'll tell you an interesting story and we'll end with that. When I first got married, so my first four children were girls. And each time I prepared a piece of Torah for the bris, and then it was a girl, and put it away. And the truth is that looking back, both me and my wife, that's the best thing that could ever happen to us, that we had four girls first. Because after that, we had six boys, and then another girl, who's now a Kala, and our youngest. And if we didn't have those four girls first to help my wife raise those six boys, I don't know what I would have be visiting my wife in the insane asylum. So the fact that we had four older girls to help her raise the six boys was a bracha she'ein kamohu. In any case, but at the time, you know, one girl, then another girl, another girl, another girl. By the time we had the fourth girl, the third girl already, my grandmother was a little concerned that we were going to have any boys to name for her husband. So her husband's name was Shlomo. We had to name one of our daughters Shalamis already, just in case, you know. In any case, then I learned the Kollel in Cleveland, and then we moved to Miami. And when we moved to Miami, my wife had twin boys. So it was a big simcha. I'm sure after four girls, twin boys, very big simcha. And one of my balabatim, the bris, twins. So he was a doctor. He still is a doctor. And he, what's it called, said he's also an amateur photographer, but professional amateur photographer. And he wants the schus of taking the pictures by the bris. We shouldn't hire a photographer. He will do it for us for free, and he'll consider it a schus. So, fine, why not? And the bris was over. A week passed, 2 weeks passed. In those days, it wasn't digital photography. You had to develop the pictures, but it didn't take 2 weeks. So, getting a little nervous. Where's the pictures? Finally, about 3 weeks after the bris, he comes sheepishly to my office, and he says, Rabbi, I got bad news for you. Either there wasn't any film in the camera, or the film was defective. I don't remember what it was, but he wasn't exactly a professional photographer. There were no pictures. Baruch Hashem, we had some unprofessional people in the family who took pictures. We had some pictures of the bris, but I told him, I'll tell you the truth, I feel good. Because I remember this chazal, that there is no simcha that remains complete. There always has to be a monkey wrench. And I was worrying a little bit that this was such a perfect simcha that what's going to happen that's going to mar it, and I don't know if I can handle it. Something really serious. Baruch Hashem, if it's just the pictures, I can handle that. So it's true. In every simcha, a wedding, a bar mitzvah, a bas, any, whatever it is, there's always some kind of monkey wrench that reminds you that you're in an imperfect world and you have to be dynamic. And it's not. This is not a perfect world, and it's not supposed to be. So that is the lesson of this Bikesh Yaakov Leishe B'Shalva and Kofetz Olav Rogzo Shal Yosef.